So I'm going to introduce Kathleen to you. Some of you already know her. As I said, what we're talking about is Sharman Crone teachers and the work of Lynn V. Andrews. Now, Kathleen, she began studying with Lynn in 1988. I was going to say 1888. That's a bit
Oh,
but 1988, which is, it's a long time ago now, isn't it? And she actually completed the training at Lynn Andrews Sharman Mystery School in 1999, and she's been an active member of the Kindred Spirits graduates since 2000. And I might have this wrong, Kathleen, but I believe you either run or you manage the Lynn's writing school, Writing Spirits. So you can correct me if I've got that wrong,
no, that's true.
which is brilliant. Kathleen is also an artist and a writer herself, and she's a member of the Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers Association. So that's to give you a little bit of a flavour of Kathleen, and lives in Denver. Is that correct?
Yes.
I gather that
Yes.
from our little
Yeah.
conversation we had a moment ago. So I thought a really good place for us to start today, Kath. Oh, hang on, let me just this is for the this is going to be for the recording so that we've got Big Face being recorded. So Kathleen, I thought a really good place for us to start would be, for you to share a little bit about how you first came across Lynn's work and the impact it's had on you. Or how, the impact it's had on you or the journey you've taken with it, just to give us some context about, your own experience within that.
Well, she started writing and she became a national bestseller, New York Times. Everybody was reading her book, and I was one of them. And I was just so fascinated by the stories and the wisdom and the possibility and the mystery and everything I discovered in there. And I couldn't wait until the next book came out. And when I heard that she was coming to Denver and going to give an event, I was so excited. And I thought, I have no idea how I'll be able to get to that event because I don't have that kind of money. It was not a good time in my life, and things were very difficult. And so a friend of mine said, well, I saw a flyer down at the bookstore, and here's a phone number, and we can see if we can get in as volunteers. So I said, yes, please call. And she did, and we did. And I was all excited. We had to go down to it's a huge hotel, giant ballroom, enough room for all the people that were coming. But we had to go the night before and have a meeting. And they would orient us and tell us our tasks and tell us what we needed to know. And I'd done things like this before with Shirley MacLaine and Tony Robbins and some of those folks. So, but you never got any place near those people because they were always surrounded, by a walking wall of people. They were cordoned off by their people. And I didn't expect to see Lynn, but we were all in the meeting and carrying on and having fun. She came in and spoke to us. She stopped and smudged and said a prayer. And when she did that, all of a sudden everything was different. Everything changed. And we were all just sitting there waiting for her. And I couldn't believe it. She stood there and she looked at us and she said, "Is there anything that anyone here needs of me?" And I thought, oh my God, how does she dare to do that. She just threw it all wide open and made herself available to anybody who wanted anything from her. No matter who, no matter what they had to say, she was present and prepared. And I laughed because I thought, how can she do that? And she did. And it was beautiful. And I was sitting there staring at her, thinking, I've never seen anybody like this before. I have never seen this before. And then I realized, okay, this woman has something to teach me. And I'm going to find out what it is. So we went through the event, and now we've all had guided meditations and power animals, and there's so much that we know now that we didn't know then, but I received a power animal that changed my life, that went home with me, and I began to change my life after that. Because, as I said, it was not a good time. Circumstances were not good. And one of the things that Lynn always talked about, I mean, she always talked about walking with the sacred, and one foot in the physical and one foot in the spirit, and the importance of going within and dealing with our own wounds to heal our own minds and our hearts of the things that were distorting our thoughts and our experience of life. That was work, because there's great power in this, but it's important to become balanced and to do the healing and the releasing and setting free. But the last thing that she focused on and shared was the importance of the act of power. In that we came into this world, it's a schoolhouse, We came here to learn, we came here to become, we came here to experience, and we came here to manifest our dreams, give our gifts, and be who we are. And that is so important. And we may not understand what it is or what we're doing or why, but we're sort of guided. And when we do these things, take on the challenges and the discipline of doing the work, we begin to see ourselves in different ways, and it's like creating mirrors. We begin to know ourselves for who we truly are. Not our little vision of ourselves, but more than we knew. And I knew that's what I had to do, because I could not have afforded to go to that event. But I was 45 years old, and I went to nursing school. And I graduated from nursing school. It was very difficult. I ended up going to a safe house. Challenges I was much harder than I ever thought it was going to be. And then taking on being a nurse, because I'll tell you the truth, I never wanted to be a nurse. I mean, part of me did, but I wanted to be an artist and a writer. That's what I wanted to do. And my dad said, "No, you can't do that. You'll starve in a garret." And I thought, I don't know what a garret is, but I'm not going there. So I became a nurse, and I did that because that was my act of power. And I bought a car that didn't break down, and I bought a house that was big enough for my children to come and live with me when they needed. And I proceeded to get the job of a dream that I never even thought existed. And I traveled, and I went to places like China and Tibet and Mongolia and Brazil and Egypt and all those places. I would never have done that if I had not gone to Lynn's seminar and taken on her teachings. And I guess what I want to say is, I'm old now and I get to do my art and my writing, and I don't have to worry about starving in a garret. I can do it the way I want to. But it never ends. The dream never ends. Life is a silent power in the heart and it wants to manifest. Doesn't matter how old we are, doesn't matter any restrictions, it doesn't matter. And Lynn did that. She showed that way. She was still working on her next event in the last days of her life. In her last year, she published the book, The Acts of Power, that got the Gold Award from the Visionary group. And I'm just so grateful that I had the chance to experience it. And I also am grateful because a lot of those events that she did are taped, and I can get them and I can still hear her voice. And even though she's gone, her legacy remains because she wrote the stories, because she didn't just dream about writing her stories, but she did it. And she put it out there regardless of anything. And they're still there. And we still have them. That's my story.
Wow, thank you. I think we might come back to the importance of the act of power or acts of power, because that is something that is can really change our lives once we embrace that and embody it and understand it. And I think people who aren't familiar with it might be very interested in knowing more. I wanted to ask you about, in Lynn's books, okay, so her Medicine Woman books, which for me, I discovered Lynn with her second book, through her second book, which was in my local library in East London, in a tiny little library in East London, in the UK. And there it was, it just sort of this thin book. It just said, okay, me, you've got to read me. And I read it and I was absolutely just blown away. And from that point on, I had to read everything that, I ever could get my hands on. I was so hungry for more. And what I can say about those books is that the stories, at one level, they can be sound quite simple, but the depth of them that speaks to each of us who read them, and gives us insight just at that moment when we need it. Maybe we're not, maybe we've got that sort of question burning, like, what do I do in this situation, or how do I move this? Or maybe we don't. Maybe we're not clear, and yet somehow the wisdom, the teaching just leaps out, and it's just like, oh my goodness, this bit was written just for me right here, right now. It really is magical. And obviously, if you're fam if I, if people are familiar with the books, there's a lot of elderly shamanic teachers from different traditions who work with Lynn. And so, I mean, the two main ones are Agnes Whistling Elk and Ruby Plenty Shield, Plenty Chiefs, rather. And so I just wanted to ask you, Kathleen, if you have like a favorite story that comes to mind from her interactions, her teachings with any of the characters, any of these amazing crone teachers, or if you indeed have a favorite of those crone teachers, whether it's Agnes, Ruby, or someone else.
I think the thing that I loved was their friendship and their closeness. When you first start and meet them, they're quite terrifying, actually. They are. They'll take your breath away. Ruby scared my socks off. But the kindness and the friendship and what they shared with each other was so beautiful. And to know elder women who were so clear in their own mind of who they were and what they intended, and yet kind of wickedly humorous at times and not terribly predictable. They just, I really love them all. I do. Some of the Ani and Zoila in the Yucatan grandmother, that was such a treasure. She was such a treasure to me. It's just in the subtleties of the stories and that you begin to see who they are, because she doesn't tell you who they are. In fact, she works very hard to keep from telling you who they are. So I don't know why, but I was thinking about the yellow sweater, the story of the yellow sweater. Maybe because she had us put that on as a play several times in the school, but Agnes and Ruby were in camp, and then they had all gone down to the little town, and there was a thrift store there. And Lynn found a yellow sweater, and she just loved it. It was just wonderful. And she got it and she brought it back, and they got back to camp, and everything went wrong, and everything was all messed up. And Agnes and Ruby started fussing and fighting with each other. And then they started fighting with Lynn and saying, "Well, I wanted a pretty yellow sweater. How come I didn't get the yellow sweater and you did?" And Lynn was very upset, and she said, "We'd take the yellow sweater." And they said, "No, we're just poor Indians. We can't have those kinds of things." And Lynn got really upset, and she got in her car and she drove down the road. She said, "Wait a minute, wait a minute. This isn't right." And she turned around and she went back, and everything was all straightened up, and they were all happy and the normal, peaceful selves. She said, "What did you do?" And they laughed and they said, "You know, it's not, it's all in how we think about things. It's not what happened to us. It's not what we have or don't have. It's how we view it that makes all the difference in the world." And so that's such a powerful lesson. It's like you say, simple and straightforward. But it's also very deep, because those kinds of things happen to us every day in our lives all the time. And to have something that is as outrageous as that trick that they played on Lynn to help me remember, okay, wait a minute, wait a minute, let me back up and take a look at this. What Lynn said, I just read it recently, is that if something is bothering you enough to pull you off your center, you need to pay attention to it. If it's fear, if it's upsetting, if it's whatever it is, if it's disempowerment, if it's loneliness, whatever it is, if it pulls you off your center, you need to stop, enter into the circle and face it and learn about it. Find out what that is, what it means to you. And then you'll begin to be able to find the tools, the answers. But it's really about facing it. You can't cover it up. You can't make nice over it. You can't do that, because you will never get away with it.
Yeah.
Never. I've tried. I've tried.
As you were talking there, I have so many stories that are, leaping out of the books to me. There's just so many that have really stayed with me. I mean, for just decades and decades, and just been such important, like you say, maybe just a few pages in a book and quite simple stories, but so profound. I mean, the one that I just want to mention is when Lynn and Agnes go off riding on horses and they stop in a field of cows and they're fooling around and having a good time. And Agnes says, What's important to you? You know, what are your values? Tell me what your values are, and for every value, get a stone, and you can build a pile of stones. And so Lynn thinks very deeply about this and says, well, this is obviously a value, and puts it and builds this pile of stones. And she thinks that she's done something absolutely amazing. And Agnes gets off back on her horse and charges right through the pile of stones and just destroys it. And, you know, Lynn is just, well, what are you doing? And the teaching in that was that we carry these values around with us as if they are a whole load of stones. And in actual fact, in the way of the teaching, that the values are, they're not necessarily, they're not necessary for us. You know, we need to reevaluate, you know, why we're holding on to these beliefs and these values, and not just assume that we're always going to have them, we're always going to carry them with us. They might not be relevant. We might be able to, you know, actually, I'm going into a Buddhist thinking now, but you know, just they might not be relevant. There might be other more essential truths that allow you to let go of those. So that's one thing that really stuck with me, and there's so many. Now there was something that came to my mind that I wanted to ask you, which has actually it's actually gone out of my mind now. But you know the teachers that she had, and they were the Sisterhood of the Shield, and they were very secretive, and they didn't want their who they were to be known generally in the world. And I just wondered, you know, if you could just say a little bit maybe to that, and what you understand from that, why it was important, and if you feel that it's still important for elder wise women to, you know, to be more secretive, to just almost it's almost like to disguise who we are and to be selective in when we make ourselves known.
That's really a good question. And the Sisterhood of the Shields, I never saw them. None of us did because she was clear. And what she said was they live in places where these activities would, if they were known, it would put them in danger. And the
Sorry.
people around them would not be kind. It would be dangerous. And I believe that that's true. I believe that that's true. That being said, I'm very clear that the Sisterhood of the Shields and the power of the Sisterhood of the Shields is very present. They do a tremendous amount of shamanic work. And I've felt it and experienced it. And there's a safety in it. There's a protection in it. They work to heal the planet. They work to shift energies. They're energy workers. And that in itself could put people at risk. If their neighbors thought they were working energy, people get really scared. You know, the unknown is quite frightening because we don't know where it's going to go and what's going to happen to it. And I've really experienced a lot of those things. And what I realized is that the laws of the universe are not nailed down quite as tightly as I thought they ought to be. They're just not. And there's a lot of room. There's more going on than what we know. And so I think the Sisterhood of the Shields, I think they need to be safe and to be unknown. And as for the rest of being secret, there's kind of a feeling that that's a good idea, but I think that that might be something else, like fear of being visible. like being willing for sacred visibility. There's someone on the internet teaching that. And, when you asked me, Allison, if I would do this, I said, no, no, this is no, thank you. But then I stopped and I thought, I love Lynn so much. I gained so much. I owe her so much. And it would be an honor to be present and to remember her and to speak about her.
Yeah. Well, I'm so pleased you did. But I think what you're raising there is really interesting and important. And I hope that this is something we might pick up in the discussion because it relates to all of us, like this fear of visibility, and not just as older women, not just as women, but as women who we feel that. We're embracing, we're reclaiming our crowness, our wisdom, and we want to contribute that. And so, how does, for example, the as you said, the characters or the teachers in her books are, can be very frightening, and they're very independent, and they live with a very powerful relationship with nature. And as I was thinking about all those things earlier, I was thinking, well, this is like, Baba Yaga on the edge, put at the edge of the village, and all these other, like witches, for example. And I was thinking, there's a whole issue about how society sees us, and that vulnerability as well as we get older that we might feel, which is an element. But then there's this element of like, wanting to claim that space. And maybe there's a crone act of power or something like that that is really relevant. And yeah, we can talk about that in a moment. The last thing I wanted to ask you, though, is about how do you feel about the importance of building community? Because, Lynn's teachers didn't really emphasize that to her as far as I know. But maybe they did. It just wasn't written about in the books. But clearly, Lynn has, she did spend a lot of time building community. And so I just wondered, how important you feel it is to have communities where we've got the crones, but we've also got younger people coming in.
Oh, I really do. The people that I knew, the people that I still know who are part of that community are such treasures to me, to be able to be with them and speak with them, to go and meet with them. I used to have a gathering in my home every month. We called it the Council of the Whistling Elk. And people would come and we would share these ideas and talk about them and support each other. And there are more of those growing again. So that's lovely. But I think community is very important and it's possible to grow it and to build it. And I'm grateful to some of the organizations like the Crone Council and my life would be so different if I had not encountered the Crone Council and the Crone groups here in Denver. It's just such a gift, and we've known each other for so long. So yes, maybe the Sisterhood of the Shields didn't talk about building community, but they had it. They gathered, they shared, and they did it in ways and places that were safe. And I think that a crone who manifests and lives doesn't particularly have to say anything. She doesn't have to tell people what she's up to or make pronouncements. But I think just by the way a person lives, They affect everyone around them. And so I'm grateful. I'm grateful to you. I'm grateful to this gathering. I'm grateful that I found it.
We're grateful that you're here and talking about this. I could talk with you, Kathleen, about Lynn's work, and we could sort of go over different stories for a very long time, but I want to open it to discussion now.